So, Martin, have you ever been on a podcast before?
Never.
Never been on a podcast?
No.
Well, I feel even more honored that you can join us.
Yeah, man, mate.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Now, for all the listeners who maybe have no idea, like, who you are, Martin, and I will not try to pronounce your last name, your surname, your family name, because I know I'm going to get it wrong. can you please introduce yourself to the listeners and tell them about like where you're from and what do you do?
Yes, I will try to. And please excuse me if my accent or my English is bad because I don't have I'm not usual to talk. I read it often, but I don't talk often. So please excuse me first. So my name is Martin Grandbarbe with the French accent. So I'm from France. And I paint miniature as a job, daily job, since more than 20 years. And I started very, very early.
Yes, please tell us about like what was the first time you saw a miniature, or you was it all gaming you came across, or was it like just miniature painting that you first introduced?
Everything started because of one of my cousins who painted miniature. So each time I saw him and my family, I remember that I must be a little goblin, you know, always asking, show me your miniature, show me your miniature. And everything started here because I remember in his room, he had made a little diorama, you know, with a Terminator and a Jenny Stiller who is opening the door. I remember an orc truck, an old one, you know, with the gunner, with with a hat, a very old one from the Rock Trader era.
Right.
So everything started here, and then one day my father came to keep me here with a surprise in the car. So in a bag, I had my first blister with five paint, two brush, and the red Mac McVeigh painting bead.
Oh wow, nice!
Good stuff. It was
And
thank since then, I never stopped to paint, even if it was a very thick coat and two color miniature. But I never stopped since then, and my first game, if I remember right, it was Titan Legion.
Ah, Titan Legions, wonderful. Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah. It was my first box ever.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it was the Warhammer 5th edition, yes, with Bretonian and Lizardmen.
Right, excellent. Okay, so just as you were getting into the hobby, I was selling that at Games Workshop in the UK. Titan Legions especially. Okay, that's excellent. So it's amazing how many people I've met who have come through the Games Workshop hobby through the Epic system. This is the Epic Space Marine system.
Yes.
Titan Legions is kind of the successor to Epic Space Marine. Mm-hmm. And I did the same thing. I loved Warhammer especially. And I love the whole concept of having these big, you know, large units of 28mm models. Mm-hmm. But finding the miniatures, being able to purchase them and afford them is just, you know, way out of our reach. So we went to Epic, and that's where you could buy everything in the box. You know, it was great.
Yeah. I didn't understand anything about the rules. You know, I was very young, and it was too much for me, but it was great. Great memories.
Do you still have the box and the miniatures still?
No, I just have still the French book from the box, and I still have the Imperator Titan.
Right. Okay,
and,
that's good.
That's all. Since then, I just bought some miniature from this box. I tried to find one, but impossible. The price are crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that Imperator Titan is worth an absolute small fortune now.
Yeah. It's amazing to see how much it costs now.
Yeah, you could sell that and come to Japan on holidays with your girlfriend. Easy.
But the problem is, if I find one, I will not sell it. You know, it's more like a very found memories of it. So
that's right.
Express it right. Sorry again for my bad English.
No. That's perfect. Perfect. No, I totally understand. Once you found it again, you don't want to part with it again. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So especially the first models you ever got, so you ever bought or fell in love with. That's really important. So, okay, that's really cool. And, of course, we're talking about an era where Games Workshop was not only expanding and growing rapidly, but, of course, it became very international and they developed various different languages, even Japanese. The Japanese fifth edition box set was released here in Japan and Games Workshop stores started opening. And, of course, they branched out all throughout Europe and had Spanish, Italian, you know, French editions of the game to broaden its audience and spread the red wave of Goblin Green bases and Blood Angel, you know, Space Marines around the globe.
I remember in the town where still my parents live, the shop still exists, even if it's different now, but I remember going there young and looking at all this yellow and red blister, this book, etc. It was fun.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So you said you sort of painted ever since you started, ever since your father bought you your first paintbrushes, your paints and your miniatures, you first started painting. And the guide, that must have been a massive help in terms of like how to clean your miniatures, how to prime them, the whole notion of actually priming your miniatures before painting them.
I did it with brush.
Yeah. I think I did the same thing. We didn't have rattle cans or anything.
Yeah, I was 11 when my father bought me this. So, you know, at this age, you know absolutely nothing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Wow.
So it was made with brush. I'm sure I use it directly from the pot. I never mixed it with water, and it was thick as hell.
Yeah. And can you remember what models they were? What?
Yeah. And funny things is I could found the same blister just a few years back.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Same miniature, and the blister is still sealed. It was undead command skeleton.
Oh, right.
You had a champion with a full armor, you know, with the sword and the back and the banner.
The standard bearer and a musician or something, yeah?
Yeah, the musician. I don't know where is Lung, but he had a sort of trumpet.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, wonderful. Okay. Excellent. So you repurchased those miniatures, or did you find the original ones at your home?
No, this is the original ones.
Wow.
But I found the same blister, the same period,
and
the same miniature inside.
Huh.
So I was very happy to find them because it was cool to find exactly the first blister you had when you were a child.
Yeah. Yeah, most people's like first blister of miniatures is usually their first love. Was Undead your first love in terms of fantasy? Or was it something else?
No, I think Warhammer was part of it. Some French comic was part of it too. It's called, I don't know the name in English. I don't even know if it was translated somewhere, but it was a fantasy comics with an elf who helped dwarves to find their treasure in a world very really amazing, beautiful, but dangerous. And this and Warhammer, of course, was part of it. And I had some book. What is the name in English for this book? You know, when you made an adventure literally with number. You have to go there, to there, to there. You can die every time.
Right. Choose your own adventure, I think.
Yeah.
But you're choosing your own adventure. You're basically, you know, you create a character and then you take on a quest, and then that basically determines which way you'll go. You want to go to page 14, go to page 21, you want to fight the big monster or run away or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know the name in English of this book, but it was also part of my house.
Right. Okay. That's good. That's nice. Yeah.
Into fantasy.
Yeah. Wonderful.
And movie, of course.
Hmm. Absolutely. And and so how about 40K? Because I know you're a big fan of the 40K universe, and you paint a lot of current models for the 40K universe.
Yeah.
So what was your initiation? Where did you start with that?
I didn't play second edition back in time, but my first book was the second edition Eldar Codex. It was my first book. I fall in love with this strange design of the Eldar and the miniature, and everything starts here for 40K. And then third edition come to France. So I play this edition, and the book was fantastic. I remember the illustration from Wayne England, for example, very dark. It was everything started here, and I had also the Sister of Battle second edition codex and Angel of Death from the second edition. I think that was the first three books, then the third edition that brought me in, and Necromunda was my most beloved gamer from this time. I think this is the game I played the most.
Necromunda? Right, okay. Yeah. Wonderful. Okay.
I like to burn everything with my fanatic.
you like to play the Redemptionists. Yeah, is it the
Redemptionists? Yeah. Right. I played Escher first.
Of course, Escher.
Because the miniature was wonderful. I never painted it. I was too afraid of. But Redemptionist was my next love.
You know, I recently got to paint the Escher gang again because I found a box. Paul helped me get a box here in Japan, and I painted those miniatures, and they're still just as glorious as they were back in 1994.
They're fantastic. I still have them in their box, and one day.
Oh, great! I'd love to see you paint those.
For sure.
Yeah,
I have to.
I mean, you know, they're still, you know, comparatively speaking to modern miniatures, they're still up there equaling or bettering the standards, I think.
This is amazing with Jess Goodwin sculpt. They made their time, but they are still fantastic. And also, it's always a pleasure to paint.
Yes, even though they're very sort of flat, they've got their arms sort of posed to the sides a lot, like a lot of those miniatures during that era, but it still doesn't distract from the aesthetics, the cool looking,
and the face still really great too.
Yeah, absolutely. No, they're perfectly designed, that's for sure. So that's cool. Okay, so that was your sort of 40K fix at the time. Yeah. Necromunda was your big thing then.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming at some stage, and this is probably the big part of what we're going to talk about now that I knew you from, was from your days at Rackham. So you must have come across some miniatures, some strange-looking models in a model store or from a friend or something, and that got you into the world of confrontation. How did that all start for you?
It was with my group of friends, you know, because we play together. We met at the shop in the town called Troyes. And they are still my best friend today. And we played Warhammer and Necromunda, etc. Even Warzone with one of my friends. Then confrontation arrived. One guy tell us, "Oh, it's good, play." So everybody jump here. we choose an army, we had just few miniatures, and we play. And then the, I think during some few years, we play almost every weekend. So from first edition to second edition, we play every weekend. We made a sort of little tournament between us. I always lose. I always finish the last.
I can relate to that. Yeah.
And it was always the same of the group who finished the first. And we finished the day by playing PlayStation next, drinking beer.
Brilliant. Yeah.
It was a great moment. And at this time, we were completely fond of it.
Mm.
We waited the newsletter like little gremlins. When to discover the new concept on this newsletter.
Mm.
And then my father gently. I tried to express myself gently bring us to French. You have some of French miniature or things, a game
convention or something.
Convention, yeah. Thank you.
Right. Okay.
Thank you. And Rackham was here. We went here every time, and my father gently so take us in the car, go to Paris with us, and then wait all the day because he don't give a shit about all these things. And we were like crazy to see the miniature of Rackham, met the people. It was this during maybe 2 years nonstop, 2 or 3 years, and one day I started to think, miniatures are so cool. I want to do that. Me too. I want to be able to paint like that. If someone can do it, I can do it.
Hmm.
I was 14, 15. And since then, I painted more than I played.
Yeah.
And each time my father also bring us to this convention, I bring a miniature and ask painter, what can I do to improve myself? What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? What can I do? So it was this until one day they told me, wait, I called the boss. So it was Jean-B.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they told me that they keep my miniature. It was a dwarf from the first steam dwarf from the box, the clan.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
It was one of this one, and they keep it. They took my number, and one day they called me to tell me I can come when I want to do a test. So I told them that I will wait the summer just to be sure, as if things don't work, I will go back to school. And I never came back.
Wow. So, because at that time, were you 15 then when you joined
RAC? No, I have 18 years.
18. Right.
Yeah. So it's during this time, you know, when I told to myself that I will do it. When I was 15, I paint like a crazy during many years until this time.
Right. Wow. Okay. You really worked hard for your dream, I suppose. Hey, your dream was to work for Rackham and.
Yeah. Then I went to Paris and discovered the world. Because I was from a little town, you know, and it was a great experience. I learned a lot.
Of course, yeah, that's wonderful. So in your earlier years, when you first started painting, when you first got the painting guide and you had the miniatures,
mm-hmm.
did you have any mentors, like painting mentors that like you looked up to in your group or in your village or town or locally, were there any guys that you, or women that you looked up to as terms of like really good painters that you aspired to?
No, I don't remember, to be honest.
Okay.
I just do things, and the shop made some little contest, you know, like every shop to make some sort of animation. Sometimes I won, sometimes no, because I was really curious, so I tried to. It was a lot of imitation, of course, at this time. And I remember that one time I painted Chaos Space Marine, but it was a plastic Space Marine from, you know, the third box edition. And I made them like Jean Blanche in the second edition Codex Chaos, you know, where you just have Imperial Marines who just look more corrupted. And I was always fascinated by that.
Okay, great. Yeah.
And I remember the guys in the shop, interesting, yeah. They didn't understand this, you know.
Because radical, it was radical style.
A lot of red, strange, and glossy things.
A bit too far out for them. A bit too old hammer, maybe.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So, okay, so you landed a job miraculously through Brackham, and you got to join the painting team.
Yes.
Was it just you and Vincent Fontaine working together there at that stage?
When I joined, Vincent was here, and another guy was here too, Eric. You don't know him. You will never know him because he completely stopped painting miniature since then, since Rackham.
All right.
And he was the chief, the leader of the team,
right,
back in time. So I learned everything from both of them. Then Eric quit, so it was just me and Vincent. And then later Jérôme Otremba joined, and Guillaume Emery joined, and we were four full time during 2 years.
Wow. Okay. Nice. Now I've got a lot of questions to ask about you about that time as well. Well, Martin, because you know I was fascinated when I first saw Rack and Miniatures. They just blew my mind. I mean, I'm coming from a 1990s Games Workshop era.
Yeah, yeah. I completely agree with you because I had the same effect. You know, when I think it was the effect for a lot of people because it was completely different. It was completely new, even in graphic, in style of miniature, in design. It was so different. Nothing was like that because it was more. Everything was more like comics style, you know, guys, big muscles, big gun, stuff like that. And no, Rackham had had a very sense of beautiful design in their fantasy. It was so different. And I understand you because I think I had the same effect when I saw the miniature, especially in the convention, you know, when I was young. And you have all the miniature in front of you. You are,
I would love to have seen that. I would love to have seen them in person. I mean, that would be just amazing. But they had a very unique style. Like even like from first edition, when you saw the blisters and you saw the miniatures, how they were painted, they were not a massive difference in terms of difference of style compared to like a Mike McVeigh, very bright, vibrant colors, very clean. Yeah, like they've got the non-metallic metal sort of style happening at that stage, but very subtle. And then they just went into this real artistic, very deep, very rich colors, very gritty. How did that all start? Who was the sort of, was it Eric that implemented that, or was it Vincent?
No.
People, or how did that sort of start?
I think that the most artistic style comes from Vincent.
Right.
Yeah. Because it was really his style, you know, to put all this color in just little area and then add some graphic drawing or stuff like that. It was typical from him. So he inject this into all the team. And I think that it started from here, but the non-metallic metal, you have two stories, because two ancient painter from before I joined, each one says that he bring this technique to the studio, you know? So I don't know which one really did it, but it started at this time because they say that the metallic was a problem because of making picture.
Ah.
You know, because it's bright and it's always beautiful on picture. So they found this solution to paint metallic with the non-metallic metal.
Right.
And then it started like that just because of the picture.
It sort of suited it because they had a very comic sort of style to the miniatures. The painting style was very in a very comic book style. So the non-metallic just suited it, fitted it perfectly. I mean, you know, Rackham miniatures were not sort of wargaming models. They were sort of more boutique role-playing miniatures for skirmish games, and it sort of just blended in perfectly with all of that. You know, they weren't sort of miniatures just to paint in 5 minutes and put on the table. They were like art pieces that you would spend hours and hours to develop your own skills and challenge your own very, you know, your painting skills to make them look like just like the photographs. So in that sense, I can understand that that's the direction they went with. So that's really interesting because I know that you and I know we sort of corresponded a little bit before because I asked you some questions. I wanted to pick your brain about who painted the dwarves like back in the day? Who painted this particular miniature? All that kind of thing.
I painted a lot of them.
Yeah.
Because I first started with dwarves. And the miniature, you know, like I told you, they keep from me was a dwarf. So they told me when I come to test, do the test, the first miniature was to paint Pilgrim.
Ah, right.
Yeah. Then I paint Pigeon Beer. And then it was the priest. I don't remember the name. I'm sorry. You know the priest on the big cauldron?
Oh, yes. I've got that model. I haven't painted him yet, but I know the one you're talking about. Yeah.
And it was the third miniature I painted then. So Dwarves was a love story with me.
Great.
And, before that, you had Eric, so Eric Nouveau, my first boss at the painting team. And you had also another guy called Guillaume Bichet. For example, he painted the big chariot.
All right, yes. Yeah, the
chariot. The big red. The red one. And he also painted the first living legend, the Dears one. He's called this guy, this character, I don't remember the name. You know the character, the living legend on the horse?
Oh, okay. I know the one you're talking about. It's those core cavalry guys are so hard to find.
Yeah.
They're so
rare. Yeah.
I would love to have that guy, but I I forget what he's called now. Yeah,
sorry. Yeah, I forget too, but so it was also Guillaume, but Guillaume painted some dwarf. He painted all the clan, the steam dwarfs, and then it was my legacy.
Right, wow.
To paint dwarfs. So each new one, almost every new, I painted them.
Wow, okay. Oh, that's wonderful, man. See, I knew you're one of my favorite painters of all time, mate. So I'm really happy that you got to paint the best models in the collection.
But dwarves are the best, of course. I mean,
of course they are. Of course.
Logical.
So that's wonderful that you got to paint all those wonderful dwarf models. I love those figures, mate. I absolutely adore them.
Yeah, they're
my first love. Yeah.
With I think with Goblin, the funniest model to paint from all the range confrontation.
So you were involved in painting some of the Goblin range as well?
Very few, not so much. But you know, I because my style was more bright and less also artistly than Vincent or Guillaume Emery, for example. Because I paint, you know, I am more painter by the book with a very, very, you can easily, how can I say that? I just do, you know, I do my base color, my shadow, my highlights, glaze, and stuff like that. Because Vincent was more, like I said, the artistic way of painting. So he put 10 little color on his palette, and then he mixed them. They are directly on the model, you know. All the base color was made like that. He mixed on the model directly, tac, 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 before the paint dry, and then he worked the same way area by area, but doing all the things on this area. You know, if he had to paint an arm, he will do everything on this arm. You know, the armor stuff on the arm, etc., etc. You know, me, I was more strict. Mm-hmm. I paint the skin, I paint the armor, I paint the whatever. So because of that, I paint more light people like Sinwall, my other little baby, and Lion, Gryphon, I paint Wolfen, I painted also many, what was the Dark Wolfen, I don't remember their name.
Oh, Devourers.
Devourers, yes, I paint many of them, it was a nightmare each time, with all the Star Mall. Oh.
Yeah.
It was so long, I spent 5 days on one.
Oh, wow.
I was exhausted, and I saw another one on the on my desk. Oh, shit! And so I didn't paint many dark armies. Just a few deers, a few undead, because you had every painter had the skeleton test, you know. Because so they can have many, and in the end, so everybody paints maybe between 10 or 12 of this skeleton.
They're beautiful. Yeah, they're beautiful models. Oh, man, they made the best undead I've ever seen.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And it's my one regret that I sold my Acheron army years ago. But everyone, yeah, I love those figures. I love them.
Beautiful armies. Yeah, yeah.
Gorgeous.
That's because Jean B was a huge fan of this armies. It was probably his favorite. So he put many energy in this model.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
No, they're amazing. I think Albaran was probably my favorite all-time undead model. I mean, there's nothing more terrifying looking at that figure, especially the paint job. I mean, I don't know which artist painted it, but
Vincent.
Man, they nailed it. Right. Oh, he just did an absolutely incredible job on that figure.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it's just going to walk off the base. I mean, that's how realistic, you know, and I loved all that. They finally made an undead army that really looked like it was, came out of the crypt, or it came out of
stunning, stunning style. And because also the designer Christophe Madura was very talented and put superb detail on his design work. It was fantastic. The zombie cavalry is just crazy. When you see the movement, it was beautiful miniature.
And that's another aspect too. It's not just the like the creative input from the design team, the concept artist, to the painters. It was just this infusion of all these very talented people. And I hope you got paid well.
No. But hopefully I was young, you know?
Yeah.
And full of energy, positive energy, you know? And I was happy to be in there, to meet all these people, you know, Paolo, to meet Paolo Parente, to meet sometimes Paul Bonner came.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
So it was great to meet him, to see his work in flesh too, and to meet all the friends I have still today. Many of them, I see them, I talk with them. So not as much as before, of course, but but we are all in contact, and you know, even today, the work I am doing now is with and for ex-Rackham people. So it's like a little cult.
Yeah. We should point out that you are a full-time commission painter.
Yep.
And that you do work with major companies to produce the the amazing paint jobs you see in the advertisements and commercial side of things when they launch on Kickstarter, or they advertise through their social media. You know, we're seeing your work on the screens. You know, they're really professionally painted models. Yeah,
that's it.
Wow, mate, that's a dream job.
But I start to get older, and now I feel my hand is not the same. I start to feel pain now in my head.
Oh, really? I'm sad. Sad to hear that, mate.
Doing all this micro movement every day, you know. So I hope I can stand the brush for some time, but I don't know.
I'll pray for you, mate. I'll pray for that your hands and your wrists will stay good forever. Okay. I'll pray to Gork. Gork will sort you out. Okay.
We finish like a stone hand.
Yeah. Well, I actually broke my wrist. I broke my wrist about 10 years ago. Damn. And I thought that was the end of my painting days. I thought that's it.
Sure.
I've done something really dumb and stupid, and that was the end. And then I had my arm in a cast, like my wrist and my hand were in a cast.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to try it. I'm just going to try painting. And I started, and I could paint perfectly well with the cast on. And I was like, awesome. And then it took about a week and I was back into painting again and took the cast off. I was back into it. So luckily, you know, praise God, I can still paint.
Yeah.
You know?
For us, this is the worst thing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, this is the worst thing. And I had one of my patrons PM me today, like email me to say, he had eye surgery and he has no, like the depth perception is really off. Mm-hmm. Oh. So he can't paint. He can't do it anymore.
Oh, damn.
But it was a real shame because, that's a real sad thing about us in the hobby. If you enjoy that painting time, you know, especially, and gaming, you know, it might affect gaming as well. Your depth perception is a big part of that, you know, when you're measuring stuff and that kind of thing. So, thoughts go out to Jerome if he listens to this, and I hope that he recovers, makes a full recovery, and that his eyesight's 100% back to normal again soon because, we're not getting any younger. I'm nearly 50. Mm. You're a bit younger than me, I think, Martin, by a long way.
40.
Oh, a lot, much younger. Okay, so, it does make an effect. I've got to wear magnifying glasses now because my eyesight, it's not as good as when I was 20, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So those kind of considerations you got to make, and makes my wife laugh when she sees me with these, you know, strange looking optical lenses on my
eyes
and that kind of thing. But thankfully these kind of painting aids are available for us that we can continue doing things that we love to do.
Hope so. We'll be using,
and I think probably for the best, probably for the better. I think, you know.
I hope.
But I noticed you don't use a wet palette. Is that right, Martin?
Yep, I don't, because I don't know. I tried because when I saw everybody with it, I was curious and tried, but it doesn't work for me. As I need to control completely the dilution. Because I am a painter from the 20th century. You know,
yeah.
I'm not in the future anymore for this. So it's finished. So it's more also a habit, because I always painted with this, and I often put a lot of water, you know, in my paint, because I do a lot of wash, a lot of glaze, always, and I found that with the wet palette, I can't control like I wanted the effect, and because also it could separate the paint and the thinner in the paint. You know, you have some chemical things that help to keep the paint a bit gloss or things like that, and I found that it transform the paint also. And I didn't have the aspect effect I like when I paint. So I do a test and I say, no, it's not for me. Goodbye.
Right. Okay. That's really interesting. I've noticed a few like really good painters like yourself out there who don't use wet palettes. They just use a bit of plastic or something, you know, a bit of cardboard or whatever, anything.
You know, it's funny because today almost everybody use this. Wet palette.
Yeah.
So when they see me with my super heavy palette, they look me like, "What is this guy? What is it? How can you paint like this?"
You're a rebel. You're a rebel, man.
Because you know, you have all this layer of acrylic with all this color on my palette. So some people ask me, "But how do you do to see the color, to understand?" And I tell them that I know my color in my brain, like because I do it every day. So it's not a problem for me. I know what I do, I know what I use, what color, so I know how it will finish in the end. But it's funny because I look like, you know, I come with my crappy palette, crappy pot, completely trashed. It's fun.
Yeah, it's interesting, eh? I thought, I think I saw Angel Geraldes, you know, when he was back at Corvus Belli. I mean, he didn't use a wet palette either. He was just using just whatever he had in front. I think he used the blister packs.
Mm-hmm.
Blister packs, and he would just mix his paints in there, and you know, he's, you know, like yourself, the results he was getting was just incredible. So there you go. It's just testament to say that, you know, you don't, it's just, you know, how you apply the paint, how you mix it, you know, your own personal tastes on all that. You know, you don't need a wet palette. I use a wet palette because it's just I'm used to it now. I've used it for over 10 years now, and it just keeps my paint usable each time, which I find the best aspect about using wet palette.
Of course, and I understand that it could help people because of that too, and the fact that you could have your fresh mix on the palette and use it, of course, it help. And I know that me, I don't need that, because you know, every day is like a you have to go to paint. Every day I give me some, how can I say that? Some objective to do. And that's it. Once they are done, I next day, other objective, next day, da-da-da-da-da. So I don't need to keep the paint, you know, like that fresh. I have to finish. And then I do everything, another things. Also, because mainly I paint unique model too. So once the model is finished, another one.
That's right. You're not painting rank and file models. You're painting unique models, character models, game systems and companies and that kind of thing. Yeah, wonderful. I've got to thank you guys too, because I think it was a photo I saw in about 2002 of your studio, and you had, it was just pictures. I think it was in Cry Havoc magazine or one of the magazines,
like that. It was in Cry Havoc, I remember.
and you guys are painting your tables and you're painting your painting your models. And I thought, what are those strange paint pots on the table? I've never saw those because I was only used to Citadel paints. And then
Prince Auguste, you know, the Valero. It's Valero brand, but I don't know the story. I don't know why, but they are the same paint that than Valero back in time, but it was called Prince Auguste. Maybe the brand Prince Auguste was sold just in a few countries, I suppose.
Right. So this is Prince Auguste, and Prince Auguste was the originator before, and they used the same paints as Vallejo.
Yeah, that's the same.
To make the same paints for them or something like that.
Yeah.
So they have this sort of internal relationship, much like a coat to arms with Citadel and in the
It's like it was rebranded for maybe some countries. I don't know. To be honest, I have never think about it, but we used a lot of this and Citadel also.
All right.
Before the nightmare of the Rackham paint comes.
Oh yeah, alive. Don't remind me. But that was
oh fuck,
terrible. Yeah, that was absolutely shocking. And then we came sort of to the downfall of Rackham. Unfortunately, that sort of was. Dying days of a glorious company, and unfortunately,
they took bad decision to make something cool. You know, it's sad because I remember we had a lot of fun. You know, searching what color we can do, and we spend some days we painted, right, like we do every day, but. We talk about the name of the paint, of the color. We do list, you know, which color, okay, which name. Every painter proposed name, you know. So it was a fun thing, but they how can I say that?
Decided?
No, the producer was a French company. Le Frambourgeois, who made the paint. A good one. This is a good company who made really great paint. But Wacom asked them to speed because they wanted to have the paint quickly. So the guy say, okay, you will have this. Shut up. And if you don't want us to do our job, okay, you will have this. So, you know, in the range, maybe you have four or five colors that were actually great. A fun story also is, you know, Stéphane Nguyen, who was a sculptor at Wacom, and was still there when I wasn't, after everything goes bad in Wacom.
Right.
And he could have had, sorry, a great red, a formula of the paint finished. You know what it could be if they let the time of the company to do it well. And the paint was really great. It was really close to Citadel finally. You know, at this time, it was a Games Workshop chose a really, really, really bad pot.
Yeah,
the one with the black stuff. It was shitty as hell.
Yeah.
But the paint inside was really good.
Yeah.
And what we wanted first is to have a paint like that inside. It was the same quality. Because it was made by Le Frambourgeois also, this paint. So and he finished by call this color. So it was a red, and he called it because he is the only person, maybe one of the few only person to have this paint. So he called it the unknown red. It was fun.
It's funny, eh? Yeah. That's good history. Well, sad history in the end, but yeah, it was good at the time when Rackham was really...
Yeah, so it's sad because... And also painted with this paint was a nightmare every day. Oh, yeah.
I bet.
I did it, you know, I do my job.
Yeah.
They told us to paint with it, so I painted with it. Okay, no problem. As also, I did almost all the painting guide in the Krajavok magazine.
Oh, right, yeah.
And if you remember the first, we can't tell the name of the color, you know, because it was Valero color. So we can't say red nanana, blue nanana. It was impossible.
Yeah.
So it was just a name that may probably think of the color. So of course, with the Rackham range, it was more easy. We can put the name, exactly the name of the color inside.
Mm.
That was also the reason.
And I think issue one had the Inquisitor, the Griffin Inquisitor. Yep, that you did. Yeah?
Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, very enjoyed those a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm glad that you're still in contact with the guys and they've gone on to, you know, produce wonderful miniatures and that kind of thing in different industries, like Guillotine Games is probably the... Mm-hmm. source of many of those guys that went there. And
you know, Guillotine Games is only, you had only Rackham guys inside.
Yeah, that's it, mate. Yeah,
the boss was at Rackham. He was the second in Rackham. The sculptor were from Rackham. The guys who do the rules also from Rackham.
Yep, good, isn't it? And they're actually making money now.
Yeah, yeah, he had the good...
with the, what was it called again?
I don't know how to say that. To when you smell the good things to do. He had a good idea. It was good.
Yeah, that's right. He had a good sense of what to do next. And then they thought of the... what's the name of the franchise? Sorry, I forgot about it. The zombie...
Zombicide.
That's it, Zombicide. Yeah, and they formed Zombicide. Yeah. And it's probably one of the most successful Kickstarter... ever produced in history.
And still today, even if people say, oh, again a Zombicide game, again, but it works.
Yeah, it does. The form,
I'm happy for them.
And someone told me, I don't know if it was Gregoire, but I think that was like the second edition of Hybrid. Like if they were able to produce another Hybrid game, those rules would have been the rules for Hybrid, the second version of that game, kind of thing. And that's where those guys took that idea and made Zombicide and made $1 million. So good to them. For them. You know, all the blood, sweat, and tears paid off in the end.
Well, they made zombies because before zombies were cool.
Yeah. Well, talking about Hybrid, it's one of my favorite games. I rediscovered it. I repurchased it. The Hybrid board game.
I never played it.
It's really good. It's actually, it restored my my earlier impression of the game was not so good. But when I now replayed it again, and I've really enjoyed it. I think it's a fantastic board game. Actually, I think it's in some ways a lot better than the actual tabletop game. In respects, I think. Yeah, I think the mechanics are really sound, and the miniatures, the whole theme of it is really cool.
And it was a great idea, you know, like a sort of space hulk.
Exactly, but more in confrontation. A lot more interesting. Had all these cards with it, it was just a more interesting kind of game to play. I think more enjoyable, maybe.
Yeah.
Not to say that the confrontation game is in any way a bad game. It's a really good game. I'd like to play second edition. I think second edition sounds really interesting. The experience points and
I find it fun. You know, it's fun when you play. Sometimes it's fun, but everything is possible in this game. So sometimes it can become really frustrating.
Yeah.
Because I think it's not a game where you prepare, you know, a very precise shame of what you will do, because it could work or no. it could be worse. I remember some friend driving crazy, you know, because... one played Celt, so he had a ball on the table. So it was an expensive character, and in front of him, my friend played Goblin, and they made a fight between Baal and the frog from the Baba Yaga.
Oh, yes, the toad.
And the frog actually won.
Oh, right.
Because my friend made 6666666 all the way, so double six. So goodbye, Baal. So it was a fun game, but...
It's got a lot of names that I cannot pronounce. Let alone remember. I can't pronounce any of them. I do my best.
Cool.
Dwarf number one with hammer, dwarf number two with hammer. So no, it's a great game. I'm really glad I rediscovered it again because it's been one of those things that I enjoy painting. I just solely painted for I don't know how long. Years. I painted those models for years and years. Didn't play the game, just painted the models. It's just so engrossed with just the hobby of that, just collecting and painting them. They were such beautiful models. And I, used to just idolize your guys' paint jobs, how you could do that. You just compare that to a lot of what other people were painting at the time. It was just night and day. Your approach to painting was just so different from everything else. But I think it was a French thing at that time, like the Golden Demons.
I don't know. It was because of all the people inside. What was interesting in Rackham is how everybody share, ideas.
Yeah.
It was a sort of group of madmen, in there, like we were like in a studio and... always have the mind of thinking of, I can do that. Oh, yeah. Oh, great. Oh, it was really, really fun because everybody, almost everybody participate, and it was fun because also the paint area was where everybody hands, when they need to breathe, to sing, to... They come in the painted area, to look at the miniature.
Yeah.
In the display, because we had the four table,
right,
and we had the display with all the miniature, inside.
Wow. Yeah.
So everybody comes, talk, have idea. Oh, great. And sometimes when we paint a miniature, I go to see the guys of the wools. And ask them, what is this? Is it magic? And okay, good to know. So we can try to have an idea. Sculptor were just near us, so it was a sort of a group of young and crazy people, in ebullition. It was really fun.
Exciting, eh?
Despite the fact that it was bad as a company for people who work there, the share we had with people was really great. It was so fun. And because we were young, we didn't think too much of bad things finally, because the weekend we drank like a pirate and we go back to work and we laugh thinking of what we did the weekend because we ended always half naked somewhere in Paris, so it was fun.
Right, okay. That sounds very interesting. I'll let you reminisce about those stories with your colleagues, former colleagues later on, about naked people running down the streets drunk and that kind of thing. That sounds very interesting. Another question too I have for you, Martin, as well. Like in the studio, I noticed in certain battle reports, they changed the basing. So like the Durs would be based on sand bases. Did you guys have to rebase all the models for certain battle reports and that kind of thing?
Sometimes, yes. It was a sort of very stressful operation.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Because so Vincent was the base leader. He was the one who teach us how to build a feng shui base.
Right.
Because all the I'm sorry, I will do a little, I will derivate, because he also made all the scenery.
Right, yes, amazing. Yeah.
You know, all the scenery with the plaster,
incredible.
The cork, everything was made by him.
Wow.
And so he also had these things, this vision with the base. So he made it, he teach us how to make it, and also like the time we have to spend on them too, because we didn't have the time to spend one day, you know, to do the base. It must be quick. So we had he teach us this, and I remember that for the deals he made some sound base. I don't know if you remember that, you know, on the box, army box for Ragnarok.
Yeah.
You had all the deers had sound base. So we had to remove the miniature from their base, you know, the green and the rock one.
Yeah. Yeah.
To remove a bit of the paint under the glue under the feet.
Yeah.
And then we glue them on the sound base that he made before.
Right. So you guys weren't pinning the models. You weren't pinning.
Yeah.
You weren't.
We didn't have the choice. We have to pin the miniature, because some were heavy when we painted metal one.
Yeah.
But mostly we painted resin miniature.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Because the reason is simple. It's because before making metal mold, they need to do resin miniature, because from this resin miniature they produce, that's from that they made the mold, the silicone mold.
Right.
Was made with resin miniature. And the guys who made the resin miniature and made for the production, they had a sort of number, you know, they can do less miniature. For example, they had to do 20 of each model because they can't do 10 or 5. It's not possible for them in terms of production, you know. So we always have resin miniature first.
Wow. That's a big revelation. Yeah. Wow, amazing. Okay.
So that's why, because we had this miniature first, we painted mostly resin miniature. But the more the time advance, the more we produce miniature, the more, the less we had time to paint everything. And that's why you have cards with just illustration on it.
Right. Okay.
Because we didn't had enough time for four painters to do everything. Because at one time, Rackham had 80 people who were there. So the production become bigger, and so we can't paint everything. But sometimes we had a window, you know, to paint something.
Yeah.
That's why sometimes we repainted a metal miniature, because it was already in production, you know. And they always keep the first cast, the first metal cast, always. Because Jean always had also the first cast for him, for Rackham, so we can have a sort of archive.
An archive of all the archive made. Yes. You know? Yeah.
And if a problem arrives, something like that. So, okay, we have the miniature. We can paint it. But time was really short. And, we had to rush every day.
Wow. Okay, that's an interesting thing. I never knew that. So thank you very much for divulging that little secret of in the studio. Okay, I didn't realize that. Also, one other question, maybe you can answer this for me too, because I have a feeling that maybe they, in certain battle reports, like certainly for Ragnarok, they would photograph a miniature and then duplicate that image.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I thought so, because I looked at some, I thought they looked exactly the same. Like
you can't imagine the time they spent doing that. It was crazy. I remember it was Vincent who stayed with Jean-Baptiste Guiton. So the brother of Edouard Guiton, you know, the guy who do the concept, and Raphaël Guiton, so the boss of Guillotine Game Today.
Right.
It was a family thing in Rackham. So Jean-Baptiste was photograph. He is still, that's still his job today.
Mm.
And he spent nights, because they stay very, very late to do the picture from what the gamer wrote, you know. They wrote on the battle report, and this, and this, and this. So they had to read, so to know, okay, for example, you have a unit of, I don't know, Steam Dwarves.
Yeah.
Where you have 20 of them. So they do picture of the rank, of the first rank, then picture of the rank behind. And then it was
like a computer-generated image that was duplicated for the purposes of photography and that kind of thing.
Yeah, so yes.
Really cutting-edge technology in that regard. Like, no one else was doing that at that stage. Like,
oh, it was so like long. Really, they spent so much time.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. That was painstaking. But they did it so beautifully that you just couldn't tell. I mean, it's...
Yeah, because we didn't have all of this. About skeleton.
yeah. But you're
a painter. A painter made two of them. Also painted a lot of Hanahan models.
Right. So yes.
From we had a lot of Kyber. Hanahan model, and that's all. I mean, so yes, it was a trick they had to do.
Wow. Amazing, isn't it?
With endless night.
Yeah, I bet. Wow, that's incredible. Well, thank you very much again, Martin, for your time today. I know you're very busy.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I really appreciate you coming onto the Chronica Man to tell us all about your time in the hobby, especially during your painting adventure. And now that's become your full-time career and the love of your life, which is awesome. And I just want to thank you for being such a massive inspiration for someone like me, mate, who really enjoyed your work at Rackham, and you continue to always continue to impress me with the paint jobs you produce for your personal collection or for the companies you work for. So thanks again for today, mate.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Take care, and Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Yeah, of course. You too, and everybody.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Take care. Bye-bye, mate.
Bye-bye.
See you next time. Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah.